Chapter 9. People. Even the Empress smiled, and, seeing this, all the courtiers, including Naples and Talleyrand, were delighted. "Is not this a great day for Ireland?" said the Marquis, with a tear trickling down his noble face. "Ireland! Oh, my country! But no more of that. Go up, Phil, you divil, and offer Her Majesty the choice of punch or negus. Among the young fellows with whom I was most intimate in Paris was Eugene Beauharnais, the son of the ill-used and unhappy Josephine by her former marriage with a French gentleman of good family. Having a smack of the old blood in him, Eugene's manners were much more refined than those of the newfangled dignitaries of the Emperor's court, wherefore my knife and fork were regularly laid at the Tuileries. I have seen my poor friend Murat repeatedly mistake a fork for a toothpick, and the gallant Massena devour peace by means of his knife, in a way more innocent than graceful. Talleyrand, Eugene, and I used often to laugh at these eccentricities of our brave friends, who certainly did not shine in the drawing room, however brilliant they were in the field of battle. The Emperor always asked me to take wine with him, and was full of kindness and attention. I like Eugene, he would say, pinching my ear confidentially, as his way was, like Eugene, to keep company with such young fellows as you. You have manners, you have principles. My rogues from the camp have none. And I like you, Philip, my boy, he added, for being so attentive to my poor wife, the Empress Josephine, I mean. All these honors made my friends at the Marquis very proud, and my enemies at court quiver with envy. Among these, the atrocious Cambaceres was not the least active and envenomed. The cause of the many attentions which were paid to me, and which, like a vain coxcomb, I had chosen to attribute to my own personal amiability, soon was apparent. Having formed a good opinion of my gallantry from my conduct in various actions and forlorn hopes during the war, the Emperor was most anxious to attach me to his service. The Grand Cross of St. Louis, the title of Count, the command of a crack cavalry regiment, the L4Michevox Marines, were the bribes that were actually offered to me, and must I say it? Blanche, the lovely, the perfidious Blanche, was one of the agents employed to tempt me to commit this act of treason. Object to enter a foreign service. She said, in reply to my refusal, "T is you, Philip, who are in a foreign service. The Irish nation is in exile, and in the territories of its French allies. Irish traitors are not here. They march alone under the accursed flag of the Saxon, whom the great Napoleon would have swept from the face of the earth, but for the fatal valor of Irish mercenaries. Accept this offer, and my heart, my hand, my all are yours. Refuse it, Philip, and we part." "To wed the abominable Cambaceres," I cried, stung with rage. "Oh, wear a duchess's coronet, Blanche. Ha, ha! Mushrooms, instead of strawberry leaves, should decorate the brows of the upstart French nobility. I shall withdraw my parole. I demand to be sent to prison, to be exchanged to die anything, rather than be a traitor, and the tool of a traitress." Taking up my hat, I left the room in a fury, and flinging open the door tumbled over Cambaceres, who was listening at the keyhole, and must have overheard every word of our conversation. We tumbled over each other, as Blanche was shrieking with laughter at our mutual discomfiture. Her scorn only made me more mad, and, having spurs on, I began digging them into Cambaceres' fat sides as we rolled on the carpet, until the marshal howled with rage and anger. "This insult must be avenged with blood," roared the Duke of Illyria. "I have already drawn it," says I, with my spurs. "Malheure malediction," roared the marshal. "Hadn't you better settle your wig?" says I, offering it to him on the tip of my cane, "and we'll arrange time and place when you have put your jacy in order." I shall never forget the look of revenge which he cast at me, as I was thus turning him into ridicule before his mistress. "Lady Blanche," I continued bitterly, "as you look to share the Duke's coronet, hadn't you better see to his wig?" and so saying, I cocked my hat and walked out of the Marquis's place, whistling Garryowen. I knew my man would not be long in following me, and waited for him in the Place Vendôme, where I luckily met Eugene too, who was looking at the picture shop in the corner. I explained to him my affair in a twinkling. He at once agreed to go with me to the ground, and commended me, rather than otherwise, for refusing the offer which had been made to me. Knew it would be so, he said, kindly, I told my father you wouldn't. A man with the blood of the Fagardis, Phil my boy, doesn't wheel about like those fellows of yesterday. So, when Cambaceres came out, which he did presently, with a more furious air than before, I handed him at once over to Eugene, who begged him to name a friend, and an early hour for the meeting to take place. Can you make it before 11, Phil? Said Beauharnais. The Emperor reviews the troops in the Bois de Boulen at that hour, and we might fight there handy before the review. Done, said one. Want of all things, to see the newly arrived Saxon cavalry maneuver. On which Cambaceres, giving me a look, as much as to say, see sights. Watch cavalry maneuvers. Make your soul, and take measure for a coffin, my boy. Walked away, naming our mutual acquaintance, Marshal Ney, to Eugene, as his second in the business. I had purchased from Murat a very fine Irish horse, Bugaboo, out of Smithereens, by Fadladine, which ran into the French ranks at Salamanca, with poor Jack Clonakilty, of the 13th, dead, on the top of him. Bugaboo was too much and too ugly an animal for the King of Naples, who, though a showy horseman, was a bad rider across country, and I got the horse for a song. A wickeder and uglier brute never wore pigskin, and I never put my leg over such a timber jumper in my life. I rode the horse down to the Bois de Boulen on the morning that the affair with Cambaceres was to come off, and Lanty held him as I went in, sure to win, as they say in the ring. Cambaceres was known to be the best shot in the French army, but I, who am a pretty good hand at a snipe, thought a man was bigger, and that I could wing him, if I had a mind. As soon as Ney gave the word, we both fired. I felt a whiz past my left ear, and putting up my hand there, found a large piece of my whiskers gone, whereas at the same moment, and shrieking a horrible malediction, my adversary reeled and fell. Mon Dieu, il est mort, cried Ney. Pas de tout, said Beauharnais. Cout, il jure toujours. And such, indeed, was the fact. The supposed dead man lay on the ground cursing most frightfully. We went up to him. He was blind with the loss of blood, and my ball had carried off the bridge of his nose. He recovered, but he was always called the Prince of Ponderado in the French army, afterwards. The surgeon in attendance having taken charge of this unfortunate warrior, we rode off to the review, where Ney and Eugene were on duty at the head of their respective divisions, and where, by the way, Cambaceres, as the French say, see face it desire. It was arranged that Cambaceres' division of 6 battalions and 29 squadrons should execute a ricochet movement, supported by artillery in the intervals, and converging by different epaulements on the light infantry, that formed, as usual, the center of the line. It was by this famous maneuver that at Arcola, at Montenot, at Friedland, and subsequently at Mazagran, Suvorov, Prince Charles, and General Castanos were defeated with such victorious slaughter. But it is a movement which, I need not tell every military man, requires the greatest delicacy of execution, and which, if it fails, plunges an army into confusion. Where is the Duke of Illyria? Napoleon asked. T the head of his division, no doubt, said Murat. At which Eugene, giving me an arch look, put his hand to his nose, and caused me almost to fall off my horse with laughter. Napoleon looked sternly at me, but at this moment the troops getting in motion, the celebrated maneuver began, and His Majesty's attention was taken off from my impudence. Milhaud's dragoons, their bands playing Ivan Reichwater, their cuirasses gleaming in the sunshine, moved upon their own center from the left flank in the most brilliant order, while the carbineers of Foy and the grenadiers of the guard under Drouet d'Erlon executed a carambolade on the right with the precision which became those veteran troops. But the chasseurs of the young guard, marching by twos instead of threes, bore consequently upon the Bavarian Uhlans an ill-disciplined and ill-affected body, and then, falling back in disorder, became entangled with the artillery in the left center of the line, and in one instant 30,000 men were in inextricable confusion. Clubbed by Jabers, roared out Lanty Clancy. Wish we could show 'em the fighting on that he wanteth, Captain Darling. Silence, fellow, I exclaimed. I never saw the face of man express passion so vividly as now did the livid countenance of Napoleon. He tore off General Milhaud's epaulettes, which he flung into Foy's face. He glared about him wildly, like a demon, and shouted hoarsely for the Duke of Illyria. He is wounded, sire, said General Foy, wiping a tear from his eye, which was blackened by the force of the blow. He was wounded an hour since in a duel, sire, by a young English prisoner, Monsieur de Fagardy. Wounded. A Marshal of France wounded. Where is the Englishman? Bring him out, and let a file of grenadiers, sire, interposed Eugene. Let him be shot, shrieked the Emperor, shaking his spyglass at me with the fury of a fiend. This was too much. Here goes, said I, and rode slap at him. There was a shriek of terror from the whole of the French army, and I should think at least 40,000 guns were leveled at me in an instant. But as the muskets were not loaded, and the cannon had only wadding in them, these facts, I presume, saved the life of Phil Fagardy from this discharge. Knowing my horse, I put him at the Emperor's head, and Bugaboo went at it like a shot. He was riding his famous white Arab, and turned quite pale as I came up, and went over the horse and the Emperor, scarcely brushing the cockade which he wore. Bravo! Said Murat, bursting into enthusiasm at the leap. Cut him down, said Saez, once an ab, but now a gigantic cuirassier, and he made a pass at me with his sword. But he little knew an Irishman on an Irish horse. Bugaboo cleared Saez, and fetched the monster a slap with his near hind toe, of which sent him reeling from his saddle, and away I went, with an army of 173,800 men at my heels. Asterisk, 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 Barbazer. By G.P. R. James, Esk. ETC. It was upon one of those balmy evenings of November, which are only known in the valleys of Languedoc, and among the mountains of Alsace, that two cavaliers might have been perceived by the naked eye threading one of the rocky and romantic gorges that skirt the mountain land between the Marne and the Garonne. The rosy tints of the declining luminary were gilding the peaks and crags which lined the path, through which the horsemen wound slowly. And as these eternal battlements with which nature had hemmed in the ravine which our travelers trod, blushed with the last tints of the fading sunlight, the valley below was gray and darkling, and the hard and devious course was somber in twilight. A few goats, hardly visible among the peaks, were cropping the scanty herbage here and there. The pipes of shepherds, calling in their flocks as they trooped homewards to their mountain villages, sent up plaintive echoes which moaned through those rocky and lonely steeps. The stars began to glimmer in the purple heavens spread serenely overhead, and the faint crescent of the moon, which had peered for some time scarce visible in the azure, gleamed out more brilliantly at every moment, until it blazed, as if in triumph at the sun's retreat. 'Tis a fair land that of France, a gentle, a green, and a beautiful, the home of arts and arms, of chivalry and romance, and, however sadly stained by the excesses of modern times, 'twas the unbought grace of nations once, and the seat of ancient renown and disciplined valor. And of all that fair land of France, whose beauty is so bright, and bravery is so famous, there is no spot greener or fairer than that one over which our travelers wended, and which stretches between the good towns of Vendémiaire and Nivis, 'Tis common now to 100,000 voyagers. The English tourist, with his chariot and his Harvey sauce, and his imperials, the bustling commerce voyager on the roof of the rumbling diligence, the rapid malpost thundering over the chaussee at 12 miles an hour past the ground hourly and daily now. 'Twas lonely and unfrequented at the end of that 17th century with which our story commences. Along the darkening mountain paths the two gentlemen, for such their outward bearing proclaimed them, caracoled together. The one, seemingly the younger of the twain, wore a flaunting feather in his barret cap, and managed a prancing and illusion palfrey that bounded and curveted gaily. A surcoat of peach-colored samite, and a purple doublet of air bespoke him noble, as did his brilliant eye, his exquisitely chiseled nose, and his curling chestnut ringlets. Youth was on his brow, his eyes were dark and dewy, like spring violets, and spring roses bloomed upon his cheek roses, alas, that bloom and die with life's spring. Now bounding over a rock, now playfully whisking off with his riding rod a flower in his path, Philibert de Coquelicot rode by his darker companion. His comrade was mounted upon a destrier of the true Norman breed, that at first champed grass on the green pastures of Aquitaine. Thence through Berry, Picardy, and the Limousin, halting at many a city and commune, holding joust and tourney in many a castle and manor of Navarre, Poitou, and Saint-Germain-l'Auxerrois, the warrior and his charger reached the lonely spot where now we find them. The warrior who best rode the noble beast was in sooth worthy of the steed which bore him. Both were caparisoned in the fullest trappings of feudal war. The arblast, the mangonel, the demi-culverin, and the cuissard of the period, glittered upon the neck and chest of the war steed, while the rider, with chamfron and catapult, with ban and derriere ban, morion and tumbrel, battle-axe and rifflard, and the other appurtenances of ancient chivalry, rode stately on his steel-clad charger, himself a tower of steel. This mighty horseman was carried by his steed as lightly as the young sprinkled by his Andalusian hackney. 'Twas well done of thee, Philibert, said he of the proof armor, to ride forth so far to welcome thy cousin and companion in arms. Companion in battledore and shuttlecock, Roman de Clos Vougeot, replied the younger cavalier. And I was yet a page, thou wert a belted knight, and thou wert away to the crusades ere ever my beard. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.